This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Poppy Leveson is a designer, researcher and disability activist working across the creative industries. She applies her lived experience as a blind woman to the world of architecture and design, and she's recently finished her Master's in Architecture at the Royal College of Art and become the director of the Disordinary Architecture Project. She's here today to tell us about her passion for architecture and her career. Hi Poppy, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So what made you decide to pursue architecture and studying architecture?
So I think a lot of people meet me and they expect that I was one of those people who knew what I wanted to do forever. I think the signs were definitely there, though, when I was a child. When I was little, and I think this relates a lot to my blindness, I used to draw things from like a bird's eye view. I like to describe how I experienced the world, particularly when I was a child, as being a bit like one of those Roomba vacuum cleaners. I used to sort of just like go around a space bumping into things and then mentally mapping them all together in my head because I couldn't just like look across a room and see the room. So I've always had quite an unusual way of thinking about space in comparison to like my sighted peers, for example. And then I was really interested in the environment when I was younger. I mean, I still am, but particularly as a youngster, I was really passionate about it. And I was really interested in like how buildings can reduce our carbon footprints and all of these things. And at school, I really loved geography, but I was also quite arty, but I also quite liked science. So I kind of didn't have like one clear path. So when it came to doing my A-levels, I was doing geography, photography, and maths. So quite an eclectic combination. And I was looking at geography courses. I was looking at human relations and international relations even. And then my older brother had gone to study architecture. So it was something I'd kind of not really thought about because I was like, oh, that's what he's doing. And then I was like looking through a brochure and I was like, oh, architecture does sound kind of interesting. And my mum was like, I think it would be really good for you and not to write it off because of my brother. So I went to an open day at Central St Martin's, which is actually where I ended up doing my degree. And I just completely fell in love with it. I was like, this is exactly what I have to do. And I think it's also really important to mention that when I went to various open days at universities, I would always contact them about my access needs. And it was also kind of a test to kind of see how they would treat me. And when I went to Central St Martin's, we arrived and we were like, oh, my name's Poppy. And immediately the guy on the front desk was like, oh, we've got all this large print stuff for you. And then he was like, I'm so glad you came, because if you didn't, I was going to be like, oh, annoying, we've done all of this and she's not even turned up. And while some people might think that that's like a sort of negative thing to say or whatever, it actually just, he was so kind of relaxed about my disability, didn't kind of try and wrap me up in cotton wool like a lot of the other universities had done. He was like happy to make a joke about things, and it just kind of made me feel like kind of just treated normally, like the teenager that I was, you know. And yeah, and then the other thing that really meant a lot to me at Central St Martin's was that they had lower entry requirements than other colleges, but they also specifically said that if you didn't meet the traditional entry requirements, still to apply, because they had a portfolio and they also did interviews, and they were really passionate that, like, you know, everyone has a different route into university. And I think like a lot of blind and partially sighted people, I had quite a complex time through school. It wasn't very accessible to me. I did quite well generally, but, you know, like my A-level maths, I got an E because they gave me a textbook I couldn't read and then told me that I was the stupid one. So my sort of pathway to university wasn't sort of super straightforward. So I got an interview and I had an interview and I got on really well with the course. And then when I got my grades and it wasn't exactly what I needed to get in, we contacted them and explained, and they were like, yes, we loved you at interview. We'd love to have you on the course. So I think it also really means a lot to me, even to this day, that those people chose to see the potential in a student rather than just seeing the grades. So yeah, that's my kind of like non-super linear journey into architecture.
When you did begin studying, what were some of the challenges for you in terms of the study materials and some of the practical elements and the programming?
Yeah, so I think architecture is really hard when you can't see or can't see very much. I should say I would describe myself as being on the sighted end of blind. So I'm registered blind, but I'm kind of at the sort of most sighted end of that. So I have kind of limited peripheral vision, but my central vision is like quite usable. But then I have other things like double vision and stuff. So it's kind of it's like with a lot of vision impairments, it's not kind of like a really straightforward, like, oh, everything's just blurry or whatever, I think a lot of people think. So for me, studying has always been like trying to, I essentially have to work in a sighted way. Unfortunately, it's the challenge of being one of the like first and few people in this industry who's blind or partially sighted. I kind of have to do it as it's currently done and try and find ways of making it accessible whilst I go along. And then hopefully as I get through and I get more confident and find more things, like you do pick things up, but the predominant ways of working were just like trying to push myself to work like a sighted student, which is really not the goal in the long run, but unfortunately that's where we are. So for example, my entire first year of my degree was had to be drawn by hand. And I think, to be honest, the course, the particularly in my first year of my course, were like so supportive that I think if there were things that they could have done, or if I specifically said that I needed it to be done in a different way, that they were really open to that, luckily. So I used a lot of like magnification and just basically had my nose about a centimeter away from a piece of paper for the best part of a year. And then, I mean, a lot of the time I find with universities, it's often like the admin and the bureaucracy that is like the biggest battle that people don't realize. You know, having to fight to be able to use workshops because there's concerns about health and safety, or you know, trying to schedule in support work hours. Or I had ridiculous things where the university didn't have much literacy around blindness and vision impairment. So I was basically told by my disability advisor, like, oh, I'm mainly used to dyslexia. And I was given a note taker who didn't really speak any English, which meant the notes were practically unusable. And basically had her for like 2 years. And every time I said this to my disability advisor, it was kind of like, I'll stop complaining. The most annoying thing to me about that was that I had to do all of the admin of like planning in when she had to be at things. When I said that I didn't need it, they kind of said, well, you're not accepting the help that we're giving you. So yeah, it definitely wouldn't be honest if I said that university is straightforward. It's been an absolute battle, both in my degree and in my master's. And I think I feel like I have to be really honest about that because I have an awareness of myself as like people see me doing it and think it's possible, and it is possible, but it is really hard, and you have to really want it, you know? And I think it is starting to change, and I think there are really good people out there. But yeah, I think with lots of these things, it's like you have to go in prepared that it's going to be tough.
Architecture is famous for being an extremely time-intensive, coursework-heavy course. How did you not get burnt out, basically? How did you balance looking after yourself among all of that?
Oh, I've got burnt out. yeah, it is a very intense course. On During my degree, I actually went from being registered as sight impaired to being registered as severely sight impaired as well. So that was like another sort of thing to manage. And I also studied through COVID. So it was again like I've had my fair share of other things thrown at me. So on my degree, I actually took it over 4 years in the end. So when I was registered as severely sight impaired, I realized that actually I probably needed more support, and support wasn't really there, unfortunately. So I sort of took matters into my own hands and went part-time for my final year. So I did two of my 4 units on 1 year and then two of my 4 units on the second year. And I feel very privileged to be able to have done that because there was a sort of, you know, the fees weren't different, but I mean, I have had to take on another year of student loan to afford to live to be able to do that. And I had support from my family to be able to do that. But it definitely did help. And I think when I was making that decision, I was quite scared to not take the same path as my peers because of my blindness. And I was kind of like, oh, am I making the wrong decision, taking it at my own speed? But actually, it was like the best thing I could have done. And it meant that I had a really great final year project that I still love today because I actually had the capacity to put time into it. And then because I am a chronic overworker, my second year of that final year was a much smaller course load. So I actually had a part-time job in that year where I was working in an architecture practice. And that also was kind of it was not part of the plan originally when I'd gone part-time with university, but it was so valuable being able to kind of have that transition into work and still and then being able to feed some of that into my work at university as well. So I was kind of very lucky with how it worked out, but I would kind of encourage people to sort of really think about what is the best decision for them and not like try and compare yourself to the pace that everyone else is going at.
Absolutely. And you have, what have been some of the biggest highlights for you in your career so far?
I think the thing that I'm generally, most passionate about is when things have a real impact on people. That's really why I do architecture, is that I wanted to do something where I felt like I could help people and make the world better, and particularly people from, my own community, whether that be the broader disability community or the blind, partially sighted community. There was a really lovely project that I did with Disordinary back in 2023, I think it was, called Seats at the Table. And we did a sort of 6 month design project. And then it was an installation in a park in London for a month for the London Festival of Architecture. And it was co-designed with school children. So we did these six workshops, some in mainstream schools and some in special educational needs and disability schools. And each group designed a chair for a person with a particular needs. So for the disabled students, that was kind of designing for their own desires. And for the non-disabled mainstream schools, we gave them prompts to help pull things out. And we ended up with this like beautiful set of six chairs that, people could come and interact with. And it really acknowledged that whilst there's this really admirable goal of universal design, we're trying to make something work for everyone. And I think there is sort of some situations where that works. It's also recognizing that the beauty that can come from kind of some specificity and designing for like the variety of experiences in life that we have, particularly in the disability world. And the sort of measure for me that this project really worked was that this boy called Anuj walked through the park with his family, and he's nonverbal and autistic. And he went and sat in one of the chairs, and there's this like gorgeous photo of him sat in one of the chairs. And it was a chair that was designed by other young people with autism and various different neurodivergences. And it was just like the ultimate win that he'd like gravitated towards a chair designed by people who are just like him, but that he would probably never meet. So it was like this sort of just evidence that when you design for a particular group, like it speaks to that group. And then I'd say more recently, I've been really lucky to work with some incredible, really incredible blind artists, namely Feyen D'Eevy, who's based out in Melbourne, Australia. And it's been such a really like a lovely opportunity to explore kind of blind creativity. So I've been developing a concept about blind space, so thinking about how blind people interact with space differently, and how we could embed that into design. And we did this incredible set design, and there were loads of other amazing disabled creatives working on it, such as Jo Rizzonaldi, who is a blind writer from and poet from London. So it was just like a really lovely project to work on with people from my own community that like could just bounce ideas off of one another and just like completely understand each other, even though we were working on the other side of the world and like dealing with like 11-hour time differences.
Yeah, it sounds like a really, really exciting project. And speaking of kind of working with other blind creators, you've mentioned already that sort of bird's eye view that you apply to how you think about spaces. But what are some of the other ways that your lived experience of blindness impacts your practice?
I think being blind, but also being disabled more generally gives you a very particular interaction with the world. I think we notice so many more issues. There's all these things that, people, it might be kind of annoying to them, but they can get past it. I think of an example like a Lime bike. It's like nobody particularly likes Lime bikes parked on the pavement, but for disabled people, they become a particular barrier. And I think that is the same with so many things, is that these things that people find annoying, but for disabled people, they become barriers, gives disabled people a much greater insight into the issues. And so a lot of my work when I was working in more conventional architecture practice, when I was working at a company called DSDHA, was in public realm. So that's, designing streets and pavements and crossings and thinking very strategically about much larger areas of city. And I did find that there was so much expertise that I had in that, none of my peers had, even people who were kind of like trained urban designers. Specifically because, as a blind person, I have a much more thorough understanding about how you navigate streets. My orientation and mobility training means I know the ins and outs of different types of crossings. And you can also kind of preempt where issues are going to arise in a way that other people, I don't think, always can, because they're not having to constantly think about routes. Like when I plan a route somewhere, I'm thinking about how I can minimize the number of crossings that I have to wait at. No one else is really doing that. And so it gives you this really great understanding of a city. So yeah, I think it's also somewhere that I feel like I can kind of have quite a big impact. So yeah, I really enjoy those sorts of knotty urban realm, like streetscape sort of projects.
What makes you hopeful for the future of blind and disabled people in architecture?
I think in the past, I mean, it's 7 years or so since I've been in the industry, but there's a growing number of disabled people and very openly and proudly disabled people in the industry, whether that's in working in architecture practice or whether that's working in academia. And so I think with that also then comes greater visibility and greater conversations. And we've had some really great work, like the Greater London Authority commissioning work on disability. From my own experience of projects I've worked on, like the Victoria and Albert Design and Disability Exhibition has had like a massive impact in the museum and gallery sector. So just disability is being spoken about a lot more. It's being spoken about as something that shouldn't just be done to the bare minimum, which historically is kind of what it has been. It's like, oh, how can we make this ramp as small as possible, or hide it around the back, or whatever. And I think the culture is starting to change. So I think things are getting better because there are more role models. I think things are getting better because attitudes are slowly changing. And I think those things will continue to snowball. At least I hope so.
You have a website where people can explore some of your previous projects and stay updated with what's coming next. Where can people learn more about you?
Yes, I have a website. It is poppyleveson.com. And if you Google me, you'll probably find it. And likewise, if you're looking for more kind of resources on the Disordinary Architecture Project website, again, if you Google the Disordinary Architecture Project, will be the first thing that comes up. There's podcasts and there's an open source book called Many More Parts Than M, which also has like an accessible Word document version. So if you're kind of interested in learning more, that's probably where I'd send you.
Well, thank you so much, Poppy Leveson, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.